Hello, and welcome back to Bench to Bedside. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Firth, Executive Vice President and Chief Scientific Officer of the Research Institute. In 2022, we're celebrating the 100th anniversary of the first research lab at CHOP. My guest hasn't been at CHOP for quite that long, but he has dedicated 3.5 decades as a CHOP employee. Howard Eck, Director of Research Resources, knows every corner of the Research Institute, from outfitting new labs to planning our next 14-story tall, state-of-the-art research facility. Howard sets the Research Institute up for success. Hi, Howard, and thanks so much for joining me. We're entering our 100th anniversary, and looking back in time, I'd imagine the people who were setting up the first lab in CHOP's basement at the beginning of the Research Institute would never have imagined that the Research Institute's campus could be what it is today, encompassing more than 936,000 square feet of research space. I know you haven't been here since 1922. You've been here for about 3 decades. But what are some of the biggest milestones you've seen in terms of the Research Institute's growth?
I think you have to look at two different things. I think you have to look at the people, which is the most important part to me. And then you have to look at the space. Because if you build the space, then you can recruit the people and the faculty. And the faculty, to me, are what drives the bus. Without our research faculty, none of these things would happen. So from my perspective, having the Abramson building allowed us to recruit people to come into the institution. We're able to advance the science. And then when we built the CTRB, we were able to recruit people to come in and, again, advance the science. And we've kind of changed the way that we looked at the science over time and the way that we structured ourselves. We went from a more classical, departmental, divisional, hierarchical kind of a structure to a center-based focus. And now we're shifting yet again to a more translational kind of a focus. So to see that change, that growth over time, I think it's been really interesting. And you're right, in 1922, you're never going to imagine that this could have happened.
It's really been amazing. So you mentioned a few of the milestones already: construction of the Abramson Pediatric Research Center, the Colquitt Translational Research Building, and the Roberts Center for Pediatric Research. These were all huge undertakings, and you helped plan each of them. Each building has a unique purpose and its own atmosphere. So if you were leading a campus tour, how would you describe the unusual or distinctive features of each of these buildings?
It's a really great question. And I think it goes back to the structure that we had at that time as an organization. So the Research Institute back then was the Joseph Stokes Jr. Research Institute. It wasn't the CHOP Research Institute yet. The name change came later. But it was a very classical structure. All the pediatric hematologists sat with all the pediatric hematologists. It didn't matter what your science was about. It mattered that you had your appointment in pediatric hematology, and that's where you sat. And it's the same for oncology or the same for neurology. All of the folks in the Abramson building were organized along that classical departmental divisional structure. And then we stuck our toe in the water a little bit in regard to dry research. The seventh floor of Abramson became where we put the Center for Injury Research and Prevention, or the Center for Outcomes Research, or the Biostatistics and Epidemiology Group. When CTRB opened, we intentionally changed the way that we organized ourselves and went to a center structure. So the Center for Childhood Cancer Research, or the Center for Mitochondrial and Epigenomic Medicine, Center for Cellular and Molecular Therapeutics. And it didn't matter where or what division or department you were in. It mattered what your science was. And we brought people together to kind of cross-pollinate things. If you had a good idea about an approach to cancer research, as a pathologist, you might look at it completely different than an oncologist or a hematologist. By bringing folks together that wouldn't normally be together in a classical kind of a structure, that really gave us the opportunity to grow and develop new ideas and new technologies and new applications. And that led us to the next step, which was now we were doing human genome kind of work. We actually did that in Abramson as well, part of the sequencing of the human genome. We were one of the places that was awarded part of that grant. That yielded big data. So that big data needs to be processed in some way. And that led to the clinical research portfolio starting to mushroom and grow and bloom. And that's why we ended up building this building, Roberts, that we're in today. Now, as we look into the future, that's where the Schuylkill Avenue Research Building 1 comes in. And I think we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But that's kind of the evolution that we've gone through institutionally. It's driven by the science and it's driven by the faculty.
I love what you said about breaking down the silos of departments and divisions and facilitating that crosstalk across experts. I think that's really helped catalyze the work that we do. So that's great. So as Director of Research Resources, and I know this because I'm always asking you to do different things, your job must be different every day. In the 35 years that you've been here at the Research Institute, what's excited you the most about your work?
It's driven by the faculty. It really is. Without our faculty, it just wouldn't go anywhere. So our faculty will come up with new ideas and new concepts. And it's then up to folks like me or my group to try and create the space that they need to explore their ideas. So we have a new investigator who has a one-of-a-kind microscope system, brand new microscopy set up. You know, Mustafa Mir is just a brilliant guy, really is a brilliant guy. Building that space for him, you've got to kind of understand the science a little bit so that you can listen well and understand what his needs are. And then you build the space and then you get out of his way and let him do his science. And that's really how things have worked in regard to things like long-read DNA sequencing systems or high-end microscopy systems or next-generation biorepository systems that we've established.
It sounds like you do a lot of listening and that it influences your planning. So as we look to the future and the Schuylkill Avenue Research Building that's anticipated to be completed in 2024 or maybe the first occupants in 2025, what are some of the features that will make this facility a pediatric research destination? And how do you expect to feel on opening day?
Well, let me do the how will I feel on opening day thing first. I'm so excited. I honestly can't wait for the building to open. I can't wait for us to start recruiting faculty to come into the building. That's one of the major reasons that we're building this building, is to give us the opportunity to recruit world-class faculty. We need to have the space in order to recruit the people. So having the building proximate to Roberts, I mean, it's going to be feet away. That's going to help us so much in regard to the translation. We'll be developing big data on the benchtop, then be able to come over to Roberts. Hopefully there's a bridge connecting the two buildings. You'll be able to come over. You'll be able to talk to the computational genomics folks about how to interpret the data. Once the data is interpreted, then it gets translated to the bedside. So the whole mission of CHOP, bench to bedside, is going to be facilitated by having the Schuylkill Avenue Research Building immediately next to Roberts. It's close to Penn, so it helps strengthen our relationship with our neighbors at the University of Pennsylvania. So it's another benefit. We're going to have a maker space, something that we've never had before, but we're going to be able to actually create new things. There are so many new avenues that we'll be able to pursue, and we're going to have the kind of conferencing space that would support national or international kind of meetings in this building. There are so many amenities to this building that just are going to lend themselves to high-end science, leading faculty. And that's the thing. We want to be able to attract and retain the science or the faculty members that can do that.
It sounds like you're planning the space to facilitate breakthroughs, and even the space itself will be a breakthrough with opportunities that we haven't had. That's really, so as we enter our 100th year, we're pausing a little bit to think back about when the Research Institute began. This is an imagination question. If you were Director of Research Resources back in 1922, what do you think the tips would have been to give those ambitious researchers who were just starting out their labs?
Don't doubt yourself. Don't ever doubt in the support of the hospital, because the hospital has been so amazingly supportive of us. as a research institute throughout our entire growth. So the hospital has always, always stepped up to support us. Don't ever doubt your own science. It doesn't matter if it's 1930 or 1950 or 2020. Stay ahead of the technology or stay up on the edge of the technology, because that's where the breakthroughs happen. Believe in yourself. Keep the course.
Your enthusiasm to support the people who come here and work here is really, I mean, it's contagious. It's great to talk to you. You have a 35-year career. So what inspired you to come to CHOP, to stay at CHOP, and how do we propagate that energy?
It's a little known fact. I actually have a bachelor's degree in analytical chemistry. So I started here as a technician to run the protein part of what would become the nucleic acid protein core facility. So I started as tech in the lab. From there, I went to school and got my master's in business administration, and CHOP was so wonderfully supportive of that. And they recognized that I wanted to kind of shift the direction that my career was heading. They asked me if I would then take on the role of being the administrator for Research Core Labs. So I did that. And then we got into the building of Abramson, and they said, we need somebody that understands the science that can basically represent the research faculty during these construction and renovation projects. Would you be interested? Couldn't do both things. So again, I was given that opportunity. Well, what would you like to do? Where else are you going to get that? I mean, that's inspiring right there, to have that kind of support shown to me as I'm moving through my career. So I chose to get involved and to represent the faculty in regard to construction and renovations and moves and all of those other things that kind of come along with what I do, and, you know, space metrics and all that craziness and database stuff. All of those things happened because I was supported throughout my career at CHOP. And it's never the same thing on any given day. It's always new. It's always exciting. And in part, it's driven by the evolution of science and by the creative minds of our faculty. That's why I stay here.
You've mentioned a number of times the creativeness of the faculty and designing spaces around what faculty needs are for the next big breakthrough. Can you talk a little bit about faculty input in the planning for the SARB, how that's worked?
It's been wonderful. We've had involvement of faculty, not just across certain areas, different departments, different divisions. Let's just take our makerspace, for example. Everybody's ideas are given serious consideration, and we've got a fantastic architectural and engineering team, but the ideas for the space and how the space is organized and how the labs are going to be laid out and where the labs are going to be located, all of those things are driven in part by feedback from the faculty. The faculty are building their lab of the future. And after 35 years, I've learned to trust that. So you've got to know the direction, and you've got to rely on the vision of leadership and the vision of the faculty to set the course for where you need to be.
Sounds like we'll be really set up for success. I want to thank you, Howard. I've learned so much from you, from your vantage point of how our campus has grown. And it's terrific to have the opportunity to think about the future and also reflect briefly on the past. We're so fortunate to have talented people like you come and stay at CHOP.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure chatting.
Thank you so much, Howard. Our research campus has grown immensely in 100 years with the help of your knowledge and dedication. Please join me next time for a conversation with my guest, Dr. Paul Offit, an internationally recognized expert in the fields of virology and immunology and director of the Vaccine Education Center at CHOP.